All right, well, good morning, everyone. I am Mauricio Cárdenas, a senior fellow and director of the Latin America Initiative here at the Brookings Institution. It is a real great pleasure to welcome you all to this event, which we have entitled A Conversation About the Future of Central America, the Challenges of Insecurity and Trade. Central America is a topic that is gathering more and more attention in this city. Last Wednesday, we convened here at Brookings a group of six former presidents from Latin America to talk about the future of this hemisphere. And Central America was a key player in that conversation, and it's emerging again today. We had dinner that night with the Secretary of State, and the topic of Central America emerged again. So with this, I just highlight the point that there is an understanding that there are challenges in Central America, economic, security, political challenges. But we need to gain more insight and more understanding, not just on the causes and the roots of those problems, but on the solutions. And the purpose of this conversation is precisely that, to help us understand and help us design better policies to deal with these challenges and overcome current problems. For this purpose, we have a group of panelists. I'm going to leave it to Diana Negroponte, who will introduce the participants of this panel. But before I hand it to her, we're going to do two things. One is to acknowledge a great partner that we now have in our work in Central America. We hope that that we are able with this event and future initiatives to forge a partnership with the Central American Bank of Economic Integration. We've done that in the past with other of the regional organizations, particularly with CAF, that covers mostly the South American countries. And I think these regional players are key allies in this idea of promoting the debate and the conversation about the key topics in our region. And we have the great privilege of having today with us the president of the Central American Economic Integration Bank, who is Dr. Nick Rispiet. He is a long member of the bank. He's been there for almost 15 years now, now as president, but before as vice president. He has a PhD in finance from the University of Hamburg in Germany. He has an MBA also from Washington University in St. Louis, a key friend of this house, by the way. Washington University was founded by the same person who founded Brookings. So we have a great connection. I'm going to turn the floor over to him for his initial remarks. Then we'll go into the first panel. I sincerely hope you stay for the entire event, which will end with a closing lecture by President Laura Chinchilla of Costa Rica. We're also delighted that she's going to be with us. And I think this will allow us to really take advantage of a person who knows this region very well and has already shown in the first year in government tremendous leadership, not just in her own country, but in the entire region as a whole. And let me finish just also by saying that this is all the great work of a great colleague and a great friend, Kevin Casas Zamora, who's a senior fellow here at the Brookings Institution, a Costa Rican national, former vice president of Costa Rica, who took the initiative and has taken the leadership of putting all these programs together, and not just today's event, but our entire work on Central America has been benefited tremendously from his views and his leadership. So thanks, Kevin, for your hard work on these accounts. So with that, I'll turn it to you, Nick, for your initial remarks.
Good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Mauricio, for those kind words. Ladies and gentlemen, Central American Bank for Economic Integration, CABEI, the financial arm of the Central American Integration Process, is very pleased to be organizing this event together with such a prestigious entity such as Brookings Institution. We hope that today's event marks the birth of an alliance between both our institutions. We furthermore hope that this event contributes to firmly place Central America on the agenda of Washington political and diplomatic circles, thereby fostering studies and research that will contribute to the formulation of policies aimed at our countries. Undoubtedly, by doing so, we will highlight the role that integration organizations in general, and CABEI in particular, can play in consolidating integration and economic and social development in this sub-region. Today's event, held to coincide with the visit of Costa Rica's President, Mrs. Laura Chinchilla, seeks to commence this cooperation by addressing two highly relevant topics for Central America. The first is the trade agenda, a critical variable for the successful performance of the Central American countries and their economies. As you well know, dear CAFTA was formally adopted 5 years ago by several countries in the region, a short time thereafter by the Dominican Republic, and finally by Costa Rica. To this day, it still is the most debated and controversial free trade agreement ever signed by Central America. As soon as the United States of America announced her willingness to sign the FTA, protracted discussions started in all and each of the different countries. Two camps soon emerged, all the apologists on the one hand for the FTA and their staunch opponents. In the case of Costa Rica, it was even necessary to call for a popular referendum in order to obtain its approval. What is now clear 5 years later, after its formal adoption, is that the DR CAFTA was neither an economic miracle that would fuel the takeoffs of Central America, as its proponents were envisaging, nor the nightmare that would cause the collapse of our economies, as the most zealous adversaries were forecasting. DR CAFTA has borne fruit. However, the results have not yielded a bountiful crop. On the one hand, Central American countries have not managed to implement the complementary agendas that would have permitted the optimization of the free trade agreement. On the other hand, the international economic crisis has not allowed us to measure and quantify the benefits of the implementation of the free trade agreement. Soon after its formal adoption, a recession struck the U.S. and engulfed the world, the former by far the region's leading trading partner. U.S. imports contracted considerably, undoubtedly impacting severely on the opportunity for expansion of the Central American exports. In this respect, it could be said that although we have an FTA that has been fully implemented, it is still, to a certain point, not fully effective. Not fully effective because Central America proceeded to negotiate additional trade agreements, thereby neglecting the profound reform of its institutions and policies to optimize the advantages of the DR CAFTA agreement. Not fully effective because U.S. imports were substantially reduced at a moment in time when supposedly Central America would have profited substantially from this preferential trade relation. The second topic is also very relevant: challenges to citizen security and organized crime in Central America. The civil wars that for several decades have affected Guatemala, El Salvador, and Nicaragua have ended, but they have been replaced by citizen insecurity, particularly in Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. To a lesser extent, they have also affected other countries, such as Belize, Nicaragua, Panama, and even Costa Rica. The homicide rate the variable that criminologists usually employ to determine the degree of relative insecurity of a country because of its rather accurate measurement has risen dramatically in the first three countries, but has also increased in the others, including the peaceful Costa Rica. Once again, this is a reflection of the international situation, but must also be seen within the context of the internal weaknesses of the region. The aggressive and effective fight against drug trafficking in Colombia and the ongoing efforts to combat this plague in Mexico has driven the cartels into the Central American region. An additional twist has been the in-kind payment to local drug dealers and the proliferation of criminal gangs that migrated from the United States. The institutional weaknesses of the region, as it refers to both law enforcement agencies and the judiciary system, together with individual mistakes, such as the precipitated demobilization of armies in several countries, has allowed drug traffickers to practically take over certain territories. An initiative worth highlighting is the recent approval of the Central American Security Strategy, which evidences the concerted commitment of the individual governments to face the challenge on a regional basis. The prospects for this initiative, however, will depend on the continuous dialogue and cooperation with extra-regional countries, such as the United States of America, the European Union, and other Mesoamerican countries. I hereby would like to express Cabe's satisfaction that these topics will be addressed in this morning's forum of highly distinguished speakers. We consider these to be of utmost relevance for both the pursuit of economic and social development and the integration of Central America, both of which are reflected in Cabe's original mandate and furthermore set out forth in the bank's charter that dates back to 1960, the year we were founded. Thank you very much.
President Rich Bartov, Cabe, thank you for your sponsorship and for joining us at Brookings in presenting a morning on topics which we believe are of critical importance to us in the United States. I don't know how many of you followed the news of Guatemala this week. We have many experts, wonderfully knowledgeable people in this room. But 25 people were beheaded and two murdered in a ranch in the Petén, that northeastern part of Guatemala. One woman escaped to tell the story. But massacres and bestiality of this kind, so near to us and affecting those Guatemalans and other citizens who live here, mean that the problems of Costa Rica are not just Central American. They're part of our problems too. We're going to start off this morning with a panel which is expert in the area of public security or insecurity, the strengthening of the rule of law, and the U.S. response to it. Kevin Casas has been bringing to and enriching Brookings' study on Central America since he joined us 2.5 years ago. And we are very grateful that a vice president of Costa Rica would come and share relatively squalid rooms after the palaces in San Jose. He also drives himself to work.
I mean, you'd be surprised.
Carlos Castracena was the first director of the Commission on the Examination of Crime in Guatemala, known, I think, by all of us here with the acronym, the Spanish acronym, CICIG. Yes. And on my left is Brian Nichols, who has taken on the role as the Deputy Assistant Secretary in the Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement at the Department of State, and you can make the acronym up for that. I know it as INL. These gentlemen are going to speak for about 15 minutes each, after which I want to open it up to discussion, because we have the first director of the Central American Regional Initiative, Security Initiative in our audience, the Ambassador of Guatemala, representatives from the Embassy of Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica. You know as much in certain cases as the people on the panel, and we could have a really useful discussion. We will end with closing statements from our panelists. Kevin, can I ask you to begin?
You may. Thank you very much, Diana, and thank you all for being here. It's a real honor for me, I have to say, to share the floor with such distinguished speakers. And it's great that we have this turnout for an event on Central America. I suspect that part of that turnout has to do, sadly, with some of the bad news that are coming from the region. Hopefully, when we talk about trade issues later on, more good news will come our way. When President Obama signed last September the list of countries with very significant drug trafficking and drug trafficking problems, five out of the six Central American countries made the cut. That's a very tangible sign that the security situation in Central America has reached the level of crisis. And it's a crisis that really puts at risk the very significant achievements that the region has made over the past two decades. This is a region that made a very remarkable decision to put an end to civil wars that were truly destroying their societies. And not just that, but it is a region that has made very significant strides in putting in place imperfect but reasonably good democratic systems. All that is at risk now. And what is happening in Central America when it comes to violence is really a tragedy of biblical proportions. Just to give you a couple of figures, over the past decade or so, about 125,000 people have perished in Central America as a direct result of crime. If you worked out the numbers, this is not only more people than were dying at the height of the civil wars, but if you make the conversion, it is as though about 1.2 million Americans had perished over the past decade as a result of crime. So this is truly extraordinary. And I'll give you another figure which I find remarkable as much as it is terrifying. Just a couple of years ago, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador, each of them had more homicides than the 27 countries of the European Union combined. So at this point, it has become clear that particularly the northern half of Central America is, by some margin, the most violent region in the world outside of active war zones. The roots of this violence that seems to be spinning out of control is, are very, very complex. But one can at least mention two or three contributing factors that are very clear and very obvious. An obvious factor is that a drug trafficking tsunami has befallen the region. Just to give you a number, cocaine confiscations have multiplied by a factor of six over the past decade in Central America. Over the past 4 years, the region has confiscated three times as much cocaine as Mexico. And whereas in 2005, 2006, about one-fourth of the cocaine that was traveling north towards the U.S. Was going through Central America, the figure is now closer to 70%. So this is not just a very bad situation, but it's a situation that is getting worse at an alarming rate. But the penetration of organized crime and of drug trafficking in Central America merely reflects, as much as compounds, two very structural issues that in some ways were mentioned by President Rizvi in his words. One of them is the marginalization of a significant proportion of the Central American youth. 25% of young people in Central America are neither at school nor at work. This is a huge time bomb for the region, and it is a reserve army for crime syndicates and for youth gangs. And the problems of law enforcement, the terrible weakness of law enforcement institutions in Central America is arguably worse. Law enforcement institutions, police institutions, and the judiciaries in the region are terribly undertrained, under-equipped, and prone to very severe corruption. Not surprisingly, the levels of trust that they elicit from the Central American population are very low. And this has very concrete consequences in, you know, for this discussion. One obvious consequence is that if people don't trust law enforcement institutions, they don't report crime. Just to give you a figure, even in Costa Rica, less than one-fourth of crimes are actually reported to the authorities. And there can only be one result out of this, which is impunity, pervasive impunity. So, in a way, one of the crucial factors that is behind this violence that Central America is experiencing, it's very easy to identify. Law enforcement institutions in Central America are not merely ineffective to deal with crime. In actual fact, they compound the problem. The consequences of this are several, and I'm just going to mention some. And that is, even if we go beyond the obvious human consequences, I mean, the human consequences are staggering. I mean, half the people that are dying as a direct result of violence in Central America are young men between 15 and 29 years old, at the peak of their productive and reproductive lives. Actually, if you work out the numbers of the homicide rate in this particular group of the population, they approach the homicide rates that would define a situation of genocide. I mean, that's how bad it is. But beyond the human consequences, there are economic consequences. The best estimation, this is, of course, an inexact science, but the best estimation of the direct and indirect costs of violence in Central America approach 8-9% of GDP, which is a huge dead weight for any region, particularly a region as vulnerable and as poor as Central America. But there are also, and I would like to emphasize this, the political consequences. You know, you would be hard-pressed to identify outside Costa Rica, a very, you know, a democratic culture with deep roots in Central America. So this kind of problem plays into a set of authoritarian attitudes that are very entrenched in the region. And the risk of this, rather than merely an authoritarian reversal as a result of the fear of crime, which is, you know, I would say that's a distant prospect. The real problem is that there's a cavalier attitude towards the rule of law. There's the real danger that basic civil liberties and basic principles of the rule of law will be hollowed out in Central America. And there's also the risk that, and this has become very visible throughout the region, that there are places in Central America where the state monopoly over legitimate coercion is no longer assured. And this is happening in different ways. I mean, one way in which this is happening is the pervasive privatization of public security, the proliferation of private security throughout the region, often with scant regulation. But there's also the role of organized crime. I mean, there are parts of Central America, and not just in Central America. This is happening in the favelas in Rio, I mean, in other places in Latin America, where drug trafficking organizations are the law of the land, really. And they provide public services, and they really run the show. And when one talks about this, it is inevitable to make reference to the situation in Guatemala. Guatemala has long played a crucial role in, you know, in the route followed by narcotics on the way north. Not just cocaine from South America, but also increasingly methamphetamines from India and Bangladesh. And for this to happen, the country has a set of features that make it very vulnerable. It is about geography, but it's also about institutional makeup. And I want to emphasize here one point. The Guatemalan state is an extremely weak state by almost any indicator, particularly tax revenue. And I'll come back to this at some point. The end result of this is that even though we don't know the exact figures, it is very clear that a very significant proportion of the Guatemalan territory is outside the effective control of the state. And it's very clear that what's happening in Mexico has driven drug trafficking organizations to expand their operations south of the Mexican border. What needs to be done? It is fairly clear that Central America needs more than coercion. It really demands a comprehensive approach that gives priority to reforming corrupt and very ineffective law enforcement institutions, that gives priority to introducing modern technology and information systems as part of the policymaking process when it comes to security, that gives priority to bolstering social ties and the organization of communities, and that, above all, gives priority to investing a lot more in education, health, housing, and opportunities for young people. And there's nothing new about this. This is, in essence, what the successful cases of crime reduction in Latin America have done, places like Bogota and Sao Paulo. So this is about balancing, you know, if you want to put it in a soundbite, this is about balancing zero tolerance for crime with zero tolerance for social exclusion. But in order to make this happen, the policy interventions needed are very complex and very expensive. And I think there's a very clear case as to why the U.S. could and should help. And the U.S. is helping. I mean, there is the Central American Regional Security Initiative, which is a very well-conceived project of assistance to the region in its fight against organized crime. But the crucial point, and I would like to emphasize this, that we have to understand is that given the task at hand, given that the real challenge is how to rebuild law enforcement institutions almost from scratch and how to improve the opportunities for young people, it is really up to the Central Americans. I mean, these are challenges that the Central Americans themselves have to solve. The U.S. cannot do it for us. God. And this implies, amongst other things, that tax systems in the region must be reformed. If we want Central American states to have effective control over their territory, tax revenues as a proportion of GDP are about 16% in Central America. That's lower than for Latin America as a whole. That's lower than for sub-Saharan Africa. So nobody can be really surprised that Guatemala is having problems in controlling effectively its territory when it's a state that collects 10% of GDP in taxes. That's a state that doesn't go beyond the cities. What can the U.S. do? And with this I finish. Several things. Number one, I think there's a case for scaling up CARSI. CARSI has disbursed or has allocated, actually. Disburse is a
Kevin,
different matter.
Just explain the acronym for our audience.
The Central American Regional Security Initiative.
Thank you.
Known as CARSI. CARSI has allocated about $250 million over the past 4 years to Central America. That's about one-fifth of the counter-narcotics assistance that Mexico has received. That's an indefensible disproportion. So, you know, it can be scaled up. However, it's very important from my perspective that CARSI's funds are not spread thin in myriad projects. That CARSI focuses on a few programs with catalytic effect. The creation of vetted units able to handle multinational investigations, the use, the adoption of modern information technologies, the strengthening of prosecutorial capacities when it comes to money laundering, that's the kind of thing that needs to be done badly. And I would say something else, and this is crucial. Any increase in U.S. counter-narcotics assistance to the region should be done in a way that forces Central American countries to come up with money and put it on the table. There should be a mechanism of matching funds. The U.S. should not let Central American elites off the hook on this one. Second thing, a very concrete one, the U.S. should support CICIG, Guatemala's Impunity Commission. I'm not going to go into the details of this, but they are running out of funds, literally. Their funding is running out in September. And whatever limitations CICIG might have, I think there's a very strong record, and Judge Castrezana can give us more details about this. And the bottom line is that CICIG is a vetted unit, and a good one at that, in a country where the penetration, the capture of law enforcement institutions is rampant. So it would be a tragedy if the U.S. and the international community let CICIG fall through. Number three, and this was mentioned, the U.S. should partner with Mexico and Colombia that are crucial actors in this story. They should be brought in this picture, and they actually have developed in their own right very significant capacities when it comes to fighting organized crime that would be useful for their far weaker Central American neighbors. Finally, last but not least, the U.S. should rethink its counter-narcotics policies. And this is a very complex discussion. I'm just going to mention it. I mean, Central America needs more than economic assistance from the U.S. In its current shape, the war on drugs is a failed endeavor, and we all know that. So it would be terrific if the U.S. started having an adult conversation about counter-narcotics policies and started paying attention to alternative approaches to counter-narcotics. And this is not coda for legalization. This is simply a passionate call to look at the international evidence available in a dispassionate way. The price that Central America, not just Central America, Latin America as a whole, is paying for the current approach to drug trafficking is colossal. It's colossal in terms of violence, it's colossal in terms of corruption, and it's colossal in terms of the erosion of the work ethics of an entire generation. So